All right. Everybody will please take your seats. The Higher Education Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Ms. Sherrill, please call the roll.
Chair Shove?
Here.
Vice Chair Placencia?
Here.
Ranking Member Benjamin?
Present.
Representatives Anderson?
Here.
Baker?
Here.
Caruso?
Here.
Chambliss?
Here.
Cross?
Here.
Daniels?
Here.
Franklin?
Present.
Garcia?
Here.
Griffiths? Magard?
Here.
Peretz?
Here.
Rudman?
Here.
You have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Quorum being present, I want to welcome everybody today. Please make sure that your cell phones and other devices are on silent mode. Today we'll be hearing a presentation from the Board of Governors on university funding and expenditures. Tim Jones, Senior Vice Chancellor of Finance and Administration and the CFO for the BOG, you are recognized, sir. And thank you for being here.
Chancellor Rodriguez sends his regards. He had to travel out of town today, otherwise he would be here as well. So as the chair mentioned, I've been asked to give an update on these four topics. But before I get into those, I do want to share some introductory slides to kind of talk about what the university system has been doing with the investment that you have been making in them. So this shows the historical funding for the universities for the last 10 years, and you can see this current year was unprecedented in terms of the amount of funds that you have provided to our universities. That investment has allowed us to keep tuition low, lowest in the country. We haven't had a tuition increase since the fall of 2013. So a great benefit for our students. Universities have taken your investment and focused on our performance funding metrics, improving retention rates and graduation rates, as well as producing degrees in areas of strategic emphasis, all exceeding our strategic plan goals. And a final introductory slide, just to kind of give you some perspective on the recognition our institutions have received nationally. We have six schools in the top 100. FAU is at 112, so they're kind of knocking on the door. And of course, the biggest news of the summer was USF being admitted into the AAU. Okay, so now I'll go to operational enhancements. You provided $409 million to the universities this year for operational enhancement funding. Most of it is recurring, some non-recurring, and there's really no strings attached to these dollars. When we were asked to present today, we did go out to the universities to find out what they were doing with those funds. And we have some broad examples here, but I will give you some specifics as well. So they're spending a lot in student success areas, faculty recruitment and retention. UCF is hiring more faculty, as a lot of our institutions are. UCF is also spending a portion of their funds for student readiness in STEM majors by offering a unique program called Math Launch, which is designed to help incoming first-year students and students with financial need expand their knowledge and capabilities in math as they prepare for STEM majors. FGCU is investing $2.4 million for additional faculty so they could add more class sections, which allow students an easier pathway to a timely graduation. UWF is spending $3 million in financial aid, focusing on students who are looking to graduate in 4 years and where they won't have to get a job so they can get scholarships, not have to work, take full class loads, and graduate timely. They're also spending in other areas. FIU is spending funds on replacement of surveillance cameras, keep our students safe. FSU is spending $20 million in support of the Center for Rare Earth, Critical Minerals, and Industrial Byproducts. And finally, a final comment, all the universities are dealing with cost increases just like we are at home, increased utilities, employee wages. So a lot of the funds are going to address those kinds of needs as well. So that was my last slide on operational enhancement funds. Any questions before I move on to carry forward? Or you want to just go through the presentation?
If you would go ahead and finish the presentation, then we'll come back. Thank you.
Okay. Very good. So next is ENG carryforward funds. I'm not sure if everyone's familiar with that terminology, but just one slide here to kind of explain that. The current year appropriation for ENG is used to support instruction, research, and public service. Any funds not spent in a given year are then carried forward into the next year. And those funds can accumulate over multiple years. So statute governs the use of carryforward. So any balance above 7%, the universities have to submit a carryforward spending plan with a timeline for the expenditure of those funds. A university can only spend that 7% reserve if they have a demonstrated emergency. And those plans have to be approved by the Board of Trustees and the Board of Governors. So this is the statute governing carryforward. There were some changes made this past session, so you can see the red strike-throughs. I think those were significant changes, gave the universities a lot more flexibility in the use of their funds, particularly the non-recurring striking that allows them to utilize these funds for any recurring items that may come up during a year. So if they get wind of a utility increase midway through the year, they can use these funds to cover those increases while they build that into their next year budget. Eliminating the caps on some of the fixed capital outlay projects was important as well. As we've seen cost increases in construction over the last 3 or 4 years, those caps, some of those projects were bumping up against those caps, and then they would have to go out and look for other refunds to finish those projects. But those caps eliminated, they can use carry forward for those. So there's a lot of benefits to having carry forward. One of the bigger ones is credit agencies. When we're on credit rating calls, a lot of times they'll ask, what do your fund balance look like? Of course, they already know what they are because they've been doing their homework. But those positive fund balances does lead us to have our AA or AA plus ratings on any debt deals. And it also, and I focus on the last bullet, it also fosters long-range planning. So unlike a state agency, if it's suspended, use it or lose it, you know, if we don't use our funds, we turn them back over to the state. Universities get the fortune of being able to plan for those dollars and use them in the future. So as of July 1st, we had a carry forward balance of $1.7 billion. So that includes about $100 million in encumbrances, those items that we had acquired before June 30 but unable to pay until after July 1st. Then $435 million is set aside for the 7% reserve, leaving about $1.2 billion that the universities have to do a carry forward spending plan on. And you can see some of the larger items, and facilities is a big component of what they use these funds for. But here's a picture that kind of gives you a total on how they have allocated those funds. 50%, if you look at the left-hand side of the pie, is allocated towards academic and student fairs, facilities, and IT initiatives. So that's where the majority of the dollars are focused on. And of course, $435 million is set aside for reserves, so there's a significant amount there. Okay, now I'm going to move to the funding formula. So the 2023 General Appropriations Act included language asking the board to develop a funding formula, and here is that language. So we met with legislative staff early in the summer to ensure we understood the expectations, because this was proviso in the Board of Governors section of the budget, not in the university section of the budget. So we wanted to make sure we got this right. So this formula is not intended to replace our current performance funding model. I think everyone likes that structure as it forces the universities to focus on improvement in reaching our 2025 strategic plan goals. So the formula was intended, based on our conversations, to allow you all a better way to distribute incremental operational enhancement funds, that $400 million that we saw at the very beginning. There's no methodology to that. It's allocated based on universities coming in and pitching the projects or the needs that they have. So with that in mind, we came up with six components grouped into three areas. We believe that all of these areas kind of address the missions of the university, because our universities are very unique. You have your regionals, you have your high research, you have your liberal arts. So we tried to keep the universities in mind as we were developing these components to see if they would fit within their missions. So we have two performance-based metrics, two equity-based metrics, and two output-based metrics. The data is easily obtained either through the board's accountability plan or from IPEDS. So here are the six components. So the first two, we look at the bachelor's degrees weighted by four-year grad rates, and we look at retention rates of our first time in college students. So those are your performance-based metrics. We should have all of our universities focused on those, and those two of those components are in our performance funding model. Oops, went a little too quick. So for our two equity-based metrics, we look at a university funding per FTE compared to their peers, which we asked the universities to give us back in the spring. And then we look at their funding per FTE compared to the Carnegie classification institutions. So that is the data we get from IPES looking at institutions across the country. And finally, for outputs, we look at research expenditures, licenses, and options. You're going to see those mostly in the high research institutions. We also look at graduate expenditures weighted by graduate degrees awarded. So those are the six components. So there's flexibility built into the model that allows the components to be weighted depending on your priorities. So funds can be allocated based on all six of those components, or you can pick three or four, whatever you desire. Funds can be allocated equally between the components, or you can weight those components differently as well. So here's kind of a snapshot of the formula. This is a summary tab. This is from an Excel file. Behind this are multiple tabs, which I'm sure Ms. Smith has been digging into once we submitted it by November 15th. So here are the six components that I mentioned. They're also reflected in columns 5 through 10. Here is where you can adjust the weighting of the components. So right here you can see we've weighted component 1 and 2 degrees, and FTIC is a little heavier than the other ones, but you can adjust these to be whatever your priorities are. So if research is a priority, you can put the weight on those two components. Or if you want to focus on equity, you can weight components 3 and 4 a little higher. And then we have a base allocation piece. So if you decide that, hey, we want to start everyone out with $1 million, you would put $12 million here. That would distribute that $12 million in column 4. Each school would start off with $1 million. And then whatever else you want to distribute according to the model, you would enter that here. It populates all the fields below and comes with an allocation by institution. Okay, and that's my last slide. You know, the last item on the agenda was DEI. So I didn't specifically work on DEI during the summer, so I consulted with our general counsel, who was the lead person in our office on DEI, and the chancellor's offered to come meet with any members who wants to talk about this further. So since the passage of Senate Bill 266, our office has worked with the Department of Education to adopt rules and regulations to implement those provisions of the bill related to prohibited expenditures. While we were working on the development of the regulation, institutions were considered or encouraged to consider the language in the bill, identify what impacts the legislation would have that require potential changes to their institution, but to refrain from making any permanent action until further guidance was provided by the board. So we now have a regulation that was approved for public notice by the board during the November meeting, and it is available on our website. Public comments closed during the Thanksgiving holiday. So if there are no further changes to the regulation, it will come to our board in January for approval. If there needs, feel there's a need to amend any of the regulation, we would go back through the public notice process. So that concludes my comments on DEI and my presentation, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. We appreciate that. All right, members, we're going to open it up for questions. Who'd like to go first? Representative Cross? We will do this through the chair, all of the questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for this presentation. This is a case where we want to be at the bottom of the list, at least in terms of the student tuition rates. So congratulations on that, of using our taxpayer dollars effectively to educate our students. I wanted to go to the six components of the performance measures. My two questions are, how are those six components decided upon? And using this matrix, I think that's an effective way to show that if you put a certain amount of money in and you change these percentages, my question on that is, who is going to determine what percentage is allocated to each of those performance measures? Is that the BOG? Is that the legislature? Who ultimately makes that decision?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Great questions. So when we met with staff initially and then throughout the summer, they pointed us to the college system allocation model. So we kind of started there with how that model works. We also looked at a model that was developed in 2004 by our universities that we used to use for enrollment funding. There were some components in there that kind of made sense. So we took those models in our conversation with staff to figure out what was important to you all, because the percentages are determined by you. So we're not offering any weights. We're going to leave that entirely up to you, so you can weight this how you seem fit. So if priorities change over time, you can adjust to those priorities. So we focused on a couple of metrics that was related to all the schools. That would be the first two components. And then equity was actually in the proviso. So we looked at what's the best way to do equity. A lot of times we just focus on equity within Florida. So that's kind of the dog chasing the tail, right? So you raise one up over here to address equity, then you have an equity issue over here. So that's where we asked the universities to tell us what their peers were. And then we looked nationally at what their peers would be. So we felt like that was a good representation of where schools should be in terms of funding per FTE. And the last two components, as I mentioned, are really focused on research. So your preeminence and your high research institutions will benefit from those two metrics. We felt like all of these metrics had something in common with all the schools.
Rep. Cross, do you have a follow-up? All right. Rep. Anderson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Vice Chancellor, for your presentation and the work that you and the BOG have done on this. So a couple questions, if that's okay, Chair.
We'll do one at a time.
One at a time? Okay. Well, the first one's just a clarifying question. So it's my understanding the BOG was instructed by the legislature or through proviso to come up with this formula. That's accurate, right?
You're recognized.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
Okay.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And then just to clarify again, these are recommendations, right? This is not necessarily policy that we're looking to enact at this time. Is that accurate?
You're recognized.
Yes, sir. That is correct.
Okay.
Another follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. So when you were developing that these recommendations, what kind of input did the universities have during that process?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So our focus was with your staff. Since this came from the legislature, we wanted to make sure that we were addressing your all's needs. We talked briefly to the universities, but we didn't have a lot of input from them because, once again, we were focusing on this was yours. We wanted to make sure this met yours needs. In my experience, I've worked for the board for over 20 years. We've had a lot of other models we've had to do, projects we've had to do. Getting consensus among 12 institutions has been challenging. So we weren't hopeful that we would come up with anything in a short period of time where we could get consensus. So our focus then was, what do members here want? And that's what we tried to come up with. And we know this is a starting point. Changes can be adjusted over time. We did share this with the universities shortly after the board adopted it. I did not receive one phone call or one email regarding the model.
Thank you for that answer. Another follow-up. Yes.
So I understand it's challenging, right, to get everyone on the same page in one room. It's also my understanding that that's exactly what happened with the state colleges. So why are we holding universities to a different standard when we're developing these recommendations?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. The proviso didn't require us to seek university input. It was directed to the Board of Governors to do this, and it was in the Board of Governors section of the GAA. So we felt like this was tasked to us to come up with the best model for you all to consider.
Thank you, sir. Good. All right, Rep. Benjamin, Ranking Member Benjamin, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to direct my questions to your to the definition for DEI. And I have some of the same concerns with regards to what was the outreach to instructional folks with regards to that definition.
You are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I cannot speak to that since I wasn't involved, but I'm glad, I'm sure Chancellor Rodriguez or our general counsel would be glad to chat with you about that.
You have a follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. What is in that definition? What is it the intent with regards to instructional teaching? How are the professors supposed to take that definition and how they produce in-classroom instruction?
The vice chancellor can't speak to the legislative intent, but if you would be able to see if Chancellor Rodriguez could get with the ranking member and answer that question best of his ability. With his experience in the legislature, he may be able to help with that. Do you have another follow-up? All right, thank you. Who's next? Oh, all right. Representative Garcia, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On component four, it appears that the formula is such that the University of Florida doesn't lose any money. Can you explain why?
You are recognized.
Thank you. So if I heard your question correctly on component four, which is comparing their funding per FTE to their Carnegie classifications. So I don't have the model in front of me to look, but there were some schools, if you look, compare them against their Carnegie classification institutions, were already above their peers in that area. Some are below. So in that case, if you were above your peer, then maybe you do not need any additional funding. But the model is built that you could decide, okay, we don't want to be equal to our peer. We want to adjust it to be 110% of our peers. So there is flexibility built in to adjust component four and even component three to say, hey, we want to go above what we're, what other institutions of similar size or classification is.
Vice Chancellor, as long as you don't call it the eye test, you'll be all right. All right, do you have a follow-up? Okay. Rep. Daniels, you're up next.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I would like to request, you know, a sit down to get more information on it so that I can have a better understanding. But my question is kind of just like a bottom line question. When this process is said and done, would it give the power of allocating funds all to the BOG, and would the legislature still have any say on the allocations?
You're recognized to answer.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. It's at your discretion. The BOG is not does not have a recommendation on any of the percentage allocations. That's entirely up to this body.
Thank you. Any other questions, Rep. Daniels? No, you're good. All right, Rep. Porras, you're up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and just wanted to kind of follow up, I think, on Rep. Anderson's question. You know, when the universities were asked to provide peer institutions, did you provide them with any of that criteria at all?
You're recognized.
Thank you. So we asked for the university peers right after the bill came out in May. We didn't really know what we were going to do with the peers at that time, but we wanted to go ahead and get that information in. So our request to them was, tell us who your five peers are, because we may use that for the funding model. We didn't know how we were going to use it, but we may, and we ended up using it. Because there's many different types of peers, your aspirational peers, research peers, but we wanted just your five peer institutions.
Any other questions, Rep. Porras? Yes, sir, you're recognized.
Do you think we should make funding decisions, I think, based off of how other state legislatures fund their public universities at all?
You're recognized.
I can't speak to that, sir. Florida's unique. We got the number one higher ed system in the country, which I think you all are doing a great job of providing us resources, and it seems to be working.
Thank you, sir. Rep. Rubin, you are up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Vice Chancellor. I just want to be sure I'm understanding this correctly. So of the six components that we're looking at, they haven't currently been weighted, correct? And because they're not weighted, is it too early to tell which universities are going to win from this new formula and which universities might have less funding because of the formula?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it's my understanding this would be used for potential incremental funding. So if you have $100 million next year you want to allocate it, you can do it this way. Given the fact that we're not recommending which components to be weighted, that gives you ultimate flexibility to determine whatever your priorities are. If it's research, you can weight those heavier, which then you know that's going to drive money towards our research universities. If you're focused on degree production and retention, that's probably going to be spread a little even more evenly across the system. So there's infinite ways that you can do this, and we played with it over and over to see how it shook out, and you can come up with many scenarios. But once again, that's ultimately your decision.
Rep. Roman, do you have a follow-up?
So again, just to be perfectly clear, until we put some weights to these components, it's hard to tell which universities are going to benefit and which universities might have less funding?
That is correct. That is correct. Rep. Franklin, you got all right. Yes, you're recognized.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And actually, Dr. Rubman took my question. I was going to ask around modeling, but since I've been recognized, I just want to say thanks for all your hard work bringing the state university system to being the best in the country. We know it's a lot of hard work that you do, so very appreciative of all that you, the Board of Governors, and all, of course, each individual state university does for Florida.
Thank you, sir. All right. Do we have any other questions? Outstanding. Rep. Crusoe, you're up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Vice Chancellor. Appreciate the presentation you gave today. At the very beginning of the presentation, Florida spends the least per student, or charges the least per student, for their in their university system. And I was wondering, how does that reflect in teacher retention and teacher salaries, professorships?
If you're prepared to answer that, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It is great news for our students to be the lowest in the country in tuition. And, of course, tuition for undergraduates ultimately resides with you all because that's set in statute. So kudos to you. We were provided $100 million this year by the legislature for recruitment and retention of faculty. Preeminent schools received additional funding for recruitment, retention, and other needs. So I think regardless of what tuition is, the legislature has seen appropriate to provide us with additional funds to make sure we are retaining and recruiting the best faculty in the system.
All right. Great questions today. All right. Thank you. We appreciate your time and your presentation. And if you would, please pass along to the chancellor the member's request to meet with him. Thank
yes,
you. All right. Are there any members of the public wishing to testify or speak? All right. Well, I want to thank all of you for being here today. We try to keep these meetings on time and quick and to the point. We've got an amazing university system, and I think that once we're done working on this, we'll have a great funding model. Thank you all for being here today. This concludes our committee agenda. And if there's no other business before the committee, Rep. Anderson moves, we rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.